Hello, this is Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network every Thursday at 1 p.m. And you can also find me on the Conscious Resistance YouTube channel and Conscious Resistance website. So today we have Samuel Kovač, who is a Czechoslovakian who's currently living in Mexico. He's a Bitcoin specialist, lecturer, consultant, and blogger. And he's also got a great perspective on the change between communism and more free market capitalism. I guess you can't really say it's pure free market, but you can say it's more free, right, than before. So Samuel, tell us. Maybe we'll start off with how you became an anarchist or a voluntarist.
Hi. Yeah. Well, you see, I think my change happened, or how all this happened, was because of my youth and how I grew up. I was growing up in Czechoslovakia under the communist rule, and I saw how it didn't really work and how it wasn't good for the people. And then I thought maybe there has to be a change, and the change really came in 1989. And I really liked it, and I decided this is what I want to pursue: the free markets, the freedom for the people, for the ideas, and freedom of speech and all that. And I really like it, and I think that's how the world should function. And I see that, like, how it's not working very well in some countries at the moment, how the rules are being enforced, and there are too many and strange, crazy rules. So I think, yeah, we should really work on making the world freer, and that's better for everybody.
Oh, yes. So were there any books or personalities that also influenced you?
Not really. Not that I can recall. I'm in this area, I'm more like a self-studied person. You know, I studied a lot on the computer. But it was more like a revolt against what was going on in Czechoslovakia at that time. There were actually many more people like me that they didn't like the regime. Very, very like a cliche, or the thing, you know, that now is seems really crazy, but it was really like that. In Czechoslovakia was about the haircut. You, as a boy, you could only have short hair. If you like different kind of music, like metal or hard rock music, you still couldn't wear long hair because it was prohibited. Wow. It was for girls. So communists, they try to regulate a lot of aspects of your life. And people, you know, like me and other people, they were like, yeah, we have to do something else. We have to be opposite. This is crazy. So that's how I became an anarchist, really, by trying to be against this this crazy system. I was too young to do anything, you know, special. I was 12 when it changed. But yeah, that's how I started. I don't really think there was any special personality except for, like, the, you know, the revolt against the system.
So who was the dictator at that time?
Well, in Czechoslovakia, the president was Husák. Was his name. In Russia, it was a big country, our big neighborhood. You know the famous guy Stalin.
Yeah, yeah.
Was the huge dictator. Slovakia, Czechoslovakia, it was a small country. Mm-hmm. Whole Czechoslovakia is 15 million people, so we were like, you know, just a small country in the Europe. But yeah, in our case, it was a president named Husák.
And so what changes did you see after the revolution?
Oh, yeah, the change, it was a huge change. It happened November 17, 1989, when, like, the whole regime started breaking down. Before, there was only one party. The elections were rigged, of course. You got the Communist Party. Everybody had to be in a Communist Party if they wanted to get a good job or even a good school, and all these things that maybe many people are not aware of, how it worked. But then it really came, you can say, crumbling down from within the days. There were elections, new political parties grew up out of nothing, the whole economic system started to change because of the, you know, how it was planned. I know if you or any of your, you know, readers or people that watch these videos, if they've been to Cuba, because I think the people from US cannot really go to Cuba still.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like still, it's in Cuba, you only had certain kinds of products, like in the States, and now in Czechoslovakia and Slovakia, you have like hundreds of different sweets and milk by 10 different producers with different prices and all that. Before, you get one kind of milk for everybody.
So evil, at one price, evil capitalists, right?
Yeah, it was like, it was really like crazy. You got one milk and one price in all the stores.
Wow.
Like it's still in Cuba, but it's a different story. So, and then it really changed. It was like, you know, for us it was like a different world. We were wondering what's going on. You got all these products, you got all these magazines, imported magazines from different countries. You could actually travel to different countries, like the Austria, Bratislava, where I lived, is just a few kilometers. You know, we have a border. We could see Austria when we were kids. We could see Austria, but we could not go because it was like the Iron Curtain. So we could travel. We got all these products, and you could actually start a business. I was too young, but you could start a business yourself. You could work on different ideas. Before, everything was controlled, and everything had to be vetted by this, you know, communist government. We got 5-year plans, and you know, it's for most people, it's maybe like from Mars or something.
Yeah.
But it was really crazy, and then it changed completely. But what was interesting that the change was like maybe too sudden, and there were no rules. So people that had money, and it was very funny. People that worked for the communist government before, and they were good connected, and they got money. Then they became the biggest capitalist overnight, and with the same connections and with the same money, they made a lot of money because there were no real rules. So you could do whatever you wanted until, you know, the new parliament started to vote, and we were looking how to privatize all the, you know, all the communist factories and all that. It was really a crazy time of a couple years. Like, for example, the privatization, because it was like, okay, so it's everybody's property. So you cannot give it to just one, you know, new capitalist. So there was this thing called coupon privatization, where every citizen of Czechoslovakia got coupon book and could buy, like, stocks in different previously government companies. And they were supposed to like spread the, you know, the wealth between the people. But who knew how it works? There were just a few people who knew how it works,
mm-hmm.
how the stock market works and all that. So they made millions, and the regular people, they were like, okay, I got some stocks. How do I sell them? What do I do? So it was time like Wild West, time for all these entrepreneurs that, you know, were scamming the regular people that had no idea how the capitalism works.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It was a crazy, crazy time of 5, maybe 10 years. Yeah. Nice that you could do what you wanted, and you were not, you know, spied on by the government all the time and all that. So,
yeah.
Like, some people, like, for example, my wife, she has some relatives in U.S. They left in 1968 when there was this like kind of a revolt in Eastern Europe against communists and Russia, but it failed. But many people escaped. And so if you had relatives in, like, you know, capitalist countries, you were being spied on twice, like twice that hard as other other citizens. So it was really crazy. So we were happy that this change happened. But then looking in the retrospective, it was really like a Wild West. You know, you got all this businessmen importing crazy things from all over the world. The Chinese stuff came in, and the prices were rigged. It was like, you know, there was no control of anything for a few years.
Yeah. My mother-in-law, she's Hungarian.
Right.
And she experienced, like, a lot of communism in Romania and Hungary, I think, too. Right. And so from her perspective, and my wife also, you know, the first thing they say about communism is, you know, it was wonderful because there's no unemployment, right? Everybody has a job, right? And that's, right. that's the first thing when she came to this country. So he's like, why is there so many homeless people, right? Communism is wonderful. And then I was thinking about that for a long time. And then only recently I realized that I think it's wonderful for those people who work for the government. You know,
yeah,
because there always has to be the you know, a private sector supporting the government, right? Because that's my feeling. Like, if you don't have any private sector at all, how can you have a government that's going to steal? It's like the host. It's like a parasite. It's like a parasite with no host, right?
Well, in communism, you got government and you got government companies. So everybody got job because you either were working for government or you were working for government company. So in a way, it was nice. It was very good because you didn't have, like, you know, a government stealing from the people, you know, taxing them, because it was all government. So, but then you got people stealing within the government and all that, but you really didn't, you know, it was kind of a crazy idea that you got a company that was supposedly paying the taxes to the government, but the company was government owned. So
yeah. So
you were paying taxes to yourself.
Yeah. So what's weird about it is that, you know, you have these you know, really strict communist regimes, right? Like Soviet Russia and Red China, right? And they only lasted for, you know, a few years, maybe a decade or two, and then they just collapse, right? And they don't collapse. They don't end because another country has invaded them, right? They end just because they can't support themselves. Like they're not producing anything of value that people want to buy. You know, they can't, maybe they're not, maybe they're controlling the farmers so much that the farmers can't even grow food to feed the population, right? So
yeah,
me, that's what it seems like. Like how long was the communism in Czechoslovakia? How long, like, when did it start?
It started right after Second World War.
Yeah.
Like 1948, actually, okay. when it started. So it was like 40-something years.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the main trouble was there was no free market.
Yeah.
So, you know, the few people that were running the country, basically they didn't know what's good for the people. They didn't know what's interesting for the people. They were just forcing it on you, like, okay, you have to buy this because this is what we make. So I think the failure was no free market, no choice, no, you know, like, the free market decides the prices and the supply and demand.
Yeah.
In communism, it was all planned. They said, okay, we have this many citizens, so we produce this much milk.
Yeah.
But, you know, it doesn't really work like that.
So what do you tell people?
Crazy.
What do you tell people when they, you know, you tell them that right after communism, there was a period of chaos where people were scamming each other and exploiting each other? You know, what do you say to people who say, well, that's anarchy. How can you be for anarchy? That's anarchy, right? Do you have people that tell you that? How can you be an anarchist? You're for exploitation and you're for, you know, scam.
Oh, that's an interesting question that never really occurred to me. You know, the thing was, or basically what was happening in Czechoslovakia was that it wasn't really anarchy. It was like you had people that were still, you know, well connected and running the country, and they were basically cheating. It wasn't like free market or liberty.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, I was working for a government company. And now the government company was going to be privatized or sold to foreigner investors, but I was still the manager there. So I was, you know, looking for shady deals. I was selling the government property at different prices and all that. So you can say it was anarchy, but, you know, it wasn't anarchy for everybody. Most people were still following the rules that were at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But some people, they say, well, nobody's enforcing them, so let's take advantage.
Yeah.
So it's like, I think that's the different still now in the how the many countries work, that you have some people that don't follow the rules and other people that follow the rules.
Yeah.
So, but anarchy is that there are no real rules, but it's free. So you decide on the price, on your preferences and all that. But still now you have rules for, you know, at least in Europe, you have rules for what you can produce, mm-hmm. how you can package it, and, you know, all this. And the big companies, they, you know, they lobby for the rules because they like them, and the small people, you know, they have no influence. But it was mostly, you know, like, I don't know, like a Wild West. Maybe that's different. I mean, mm-hmm. it was the rule of the strongest.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is not what I really like. I think people should not oppress other people or cheat other people. I don't think that's really anarchy or liberty. It was like the rule of the strongest.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. When people tell me, like, you know, do you, if there was a button that could turn, like, that could completely, you know, wipe out government, like, in, you know, night and day, would you want to do that? Would you do that, right?
And
I think that would be a horrible thing to do, because for the same reason in communism in Czechoslovakia, it was a night. You said it was a night and day thing, right? It just changed.
Oh, just a few days,
yeah,
really.
Yeah, very quick.
Week.
Yeah. So when people are used to a certain system over many decades, you know, and then you have such a rapid change, sure, that could produce chaos. I can see how that could produce chaos and disorder. You know, and right. panic amongst the people, right? It's like saying, you know, if you have a religious empire, and then you murder mm-hmm. all the priests, and you know, and pastors, would that produce an atheistic population? of course not, because you know, you're not affecting the minds of the people, right?
And that's a very good point. In
anarchy and voluntarism, people have to understand self-ownership, property rights, and you know, and the non-aggression principle. You know, for true liberty to you know, take hold. So that's why it takes such a long period of time. You know, so you know, if there was such a button to turn off government, I think it would be a horrible thing, right? What do you think?
Oh yeah, I have to agree, and it's actually a very good point you're making, because it's like, yeah, the people are, they have kind of like a support structure.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw it in Czechoslovakia, because they were used to how things work. And actually, like you said, some people really liked it. They had food, they had a job, they actually had the government-sponsored house mm-hmm. or apartment. Mm-hmm. So it was great. And then suddenly it broke down and nobody knew what to do. And then, you know, the people with connections and with a lot of money, it was kind of chaotic, yeah. But like you say, also the thing is, people have to change their perspective. They are, and maybe it may never really work, because you always have people that like the strong hand. So when you start like some kind of anarchic, you know, libertarian government or state, you still will have people that like to rule others, so mm-hmm. so it's kind of hard to do unless really people can understand it and can like it.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
you always like what we still see in Slovakia. You have people that really try to bribe the politicians and try to manipulate the elections and all that, just because they like the power. They really like to oppress other people, and they like the power. They have to show they have the biggest car and the best house and one more house in Miami and all that. So, yeah, it really takes the change in mentality.
So
actually, it was like an experiment that happened in Slovakia, Czechoslovakia, when the regime fell, that it didn't really, you know, nobody was really ready for it, and it didn't go the peaceful anarchist way, but it went the way like the rule of the strongest.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So what was the reason that you moved to Mexico?
Well, it's actually a personal reason. My father moved to Mexico 25 years ago. So I always had connection with Mexico, even when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And I was coming here for vacations, and I really liked the people and the climate and all that. And then we decided to come here with my wife. So it was like a personal reason, but I think it was a good decision, because Mexico is really more open and free, and you could say more anarchic country. That there are rules here, of course, a lot of rules. But they are not enforced that strictly, and things still work because people are, when people are peaceful and when they are nice, and most Mexicans are really nice and peaceful people, So just to give an example that I always tell to my friends in Slovakia, like, you know, the traffic rules. In Slovakia, it's horrible. There are fees for everything and points and all that. You know, it's very strict. But here you can go in a wrong direction. You can make an illegal turn. But you do it like because you are in trouble, you lost your way or something. And the police is usually nice. They understand it. Other drivers understand it. Because you're not doing it to harm anybody. You really just want to get back and you don't want to drive another 10 miles to next legal turn. So you take illegal turn. And you don't do it, to show that you are, about the law. You do it for like very, very pragmatic reasons. And people understand it here.
You're such a criminal.
So, yeah, it's a nice country to live in, yeah.
Cool, yeah. And so
that's my story, yeah.
So tell me how you got into Bitcoin.
Oh, Bitcoin, yeah. You see, it all turns around these rules and regulations and the freedom and anarchy, really. Before, in Czechoslovakia, when you wanted to travel to other countries, you actually had to buy, dollars or other money from the government. And you had a limit. A certain limit. So when we wanted to go to vacations to even Yugoslavia, which was part of the communist bloc, you had to have a permit to leave your own country and all that. So the money was really controlled. And the Bitcoin, it's like the opposite. It's like a revolt. It's really, now we have sort of like a free market. So that's great. But we don't have free money. Money is so rigged and so controlled. It's terrible. So Bitcoin is like free money for everybody. And I really love the idea. And my background is computers and also cryptography and economy. So it all, mixes in Bitcoin. Because Bitcoin lives in the computer, in your cell phone. So I was really amazed that something like this could work, that you can have, it's called like a trust without third party. So before, you have to trust banks, you have to trust the government. But then in Czechoslovakia, or even now, you trust the government to sell you just the correct amount of the foreign currency because there is a limit. They don't sell you more, or you cannot transfer more money across the borders because government thinks it's dangerous. So, but Bitcoin is free. You can send, I can send you, it's amazing. I can send you now over the Skype, I can send you $1 million in Bitcoin.
Wow.
Because it works via, scanning of the QR code. So you show me your code, I scan it with my phone, and there it goes. And it's free, it's instant, and it's free in also, not that there are no fees, there are very little fees, but it's also free that nobody has anything to say about our transaction. It's our money and it's our freedom to do what we want. So it's like Bitcoin is that you don't have to trust anybody that they know what's better for you.
Yeah.
So I really grew up hating that because the communists thought they know better for everybody and how it ended.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, just like, I tell people a lot when I talk about the monetary system, our currency, the US dollar, is a fiat currency, right? It has no backing at all. It's just completely, debt-based currency. And how many fiat currencies in the past have existed that are in existence today? Zero. Right?
Yes.
All of them have collapsed to zero. And why do we think that the US dollar is going to be any different? So what do you say to people when you talk about Bitcoin? They say, well, look at the price of Bitcoin right now. What is it, $250? It was at $1,200. Now it's collapsed. It's just a bubble. It's just a bubble. It's a scam. What do you say to those people?
Ah, right. Yeah, that's the usual questions actually everybody's asking, and I'm glad you bring it up. Actually, the Bitcoin, one important thing is the Bitcoin works at any price, because if Bitcoin is worth $10, then you just have to send more Bitcoins so that you send more value to somebody. So it doesn't really matter. But of course, if it's widely accepted, there is limited number of Bitcoins, which is a great thing compared to other monetary systems. It's like gold or something.
Oh, yeah.
So everybody can check how many Bitcoins are in existence at any moment. But they are very divisible, up to 8 decimal points. But yeah, what do I say to these people? One thing is, it works at any price, and more people use it, the higher the price has to be, because there is limited number of bitcoins. And of course, it's a speculation, but it has been in a bubble like 3 or 4 times. I saw it grow from cents to dollars, from dollars to tens of dollars, from tens of dollars to hundreds of dollars, then fell back. So it has been going up and down. Of course, you have speculators for everything. Actually, it was an interesting story with, like, for example, with the iPhones, that you have people that buy iPhones in one place and sell them in another place. They use iPhone as a currency. Instead of traveling with money, you can travel with a sealed new iPhone, because you can always resell it for even more than what you bought it for.
Wow.
So people, but that's the beauty of this anarchic system, that people always find a way how to, you know, go around this, any rules and any systems, and they, you know, they fine tune the system always. Like, so, always, I mean, the speculators like Bitcoin because there is not so much regulation. So if you want to hold Bitcoin for a long time, that can be difficult to manage. But of course, if you want to use it for practical purposes, then it's very simple, because you buy it here in Mexico and you sell it the same day in some other country, or, you know, just over a few days. So it works perfectly short time, and as more people use it, the volatility will even, because it will be more liquid. But you see, people say it's a bubble because the speculators like it. But the technology and the idea of Bitcoin, it doesn't depend on the price, and it cannot be uninvented. It's going to be with us forever, regardless of the price, because it was invented. It's like internet, you know. It's, you cannot say, well, no more internet, we don't know, because it's similar to Bitcoin in a way that internet, you know, it's very hard to censor, very hard to regulate. And Bitcoin is the same. And you cannot, you know, say no more. Now it doesn't work anymore. It will work, and it will be better and better over the time as people find out the beauty of it, I think. Yeah. So just, yeah, don't worry about the price. If you want to use it, you know, buy some Bitcoin, spend it next day, see how easy and fast and secure it is. You know, I was just showing my wife the other day, like, how do you pay with credit card? Okay, credit card number, direction, expiration date, control date, blah, 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 blah. And you give all this to somebody you never met.
Yeah.
Because you want to buy something from them, and you have to trust them that they keep it secure.
Yeah.
Paying with Bitcoin, you take out your cell phone, snap a picture of a QR code, and there it goes. Nobody has any information that they can lose or use against you or anything. And it's much faster. Mm-hmm. So it's just a question of time. Like we say in the Bitcoin community, the better always wins. The nature likes the way of less friction. Mm-hmm. So what's easier and faster is the future. I mean, the banks don't work on weekends. I mean, they turn off the computers on the weekend. If the computers, then there's nobody writing it on paper. Yeah. But they don't process things on weekends.
Yeah, yeah.
How crazy is that?
Yeah. I find it really funny how a lot of these, you know, government institutions, like, you know, like the post office, like libraries, and like banks, which banks are not really completely government, but they're, you know, heavily regulated. You know, you just look at the hours, like you just said, on weekends, you know, hours for the library. Like I just saw the hours for my local library. It's 3 hours they're open on Saturday and 3 hours they're open on Sunday. And I'm like, if a private company decided to open only for only 3 hours on a weekend, how quickly would they go bankrupt, right? Like, the weekend is the busiest time,
of
right?
Of course. Yeah.
The weekend is the busiest. That's when nobody's working.
Yeah, why, when people have free.
Why would you want to not be open on the weekend? Doesn't make sense, right? So.
Yeah. No, it's like the Mexican banks. They close at 4 p.m. And most Mexicans, they stay in work until 6 p.m. But the banks, they close at 4. So what's the sense of having a bank if you have to escape from your work to go to your bank.
Exactly.
Or have to go there on your lunch break or something.
Exactly. Yeah, I explain Bitcoin a lot to my patients because I'm an acupuncturist. I used to work in a clinic, car accident clinic. So I would talk about Bitcoin a lot with them because, you know, that's a little bit neutral. Like, you know, I don't really talk about anarchy specifically because that can be a little bit, they get defensive if I mention anarchy. So I have to go backdoor methods, like talk about the monetary system, talk about the Federal Reserve and things like that. And so I describe Bitcoin a lot to people as digital gold, you know, because it's limited, right? It's scarce. And that's one of the beauty of it is. And the other thing people tell me is you know, it doesn't exist. It's on the computer. Anybody can hack it and steal your Bitcoin, mm-hmm. right? And so that's another reason why people don't trust it. So what would you say to those people who say, you know, it can just be hacked? What would you say to those people?
Well, there is a thing that most people, unfortunately, they have hard time understanding with the Bitcoin, because Bitcoin it's a network. Like a technology, it's a network of thousands and thousands of computers that work together and like secure the Bitcoin transactions and Bitcoin network. And these thousands of computers, they run this software and they have never been hacked. The software is open source, so it's not hidden. You can look at how it works. So you don't have to try to hack it. You can actually read through the code and try to find the problem there. You don't have to, you know, be sneaky and try to hack it. But nobody was able to do that. Actually, there are people that are improving it over time, but nobody was able to find any flaw in the main system, which is based on years and years of research and cryptography and computer systems. What is being hacked, of course, are the companies. Like you had this Japanese company, Mt. Gox, that were securing the Bitcoins for you. You trusted them with your Bitcoins because you wanted to trade them. But it wasn't like the Bitcoin failed. The company failed because somebody, maybe inside work, maybe some hacker hacked the company. But they never hacked the Bitcoin itself. The Bitcoin are still secure and working, but this company didn't do its work properly. So what I tell to the people, to make it short, is like, you know, somebody hacks Chase Bank. Does that influence the dollar? Is the dollar less secure? No, just one bank didn't do its job properly.
Yeah.
So it's actually the same. Somebody steals gold from some vault. Is the gold less secure? No, the gold, you still cannot fake the gold, really. Well, you can, but obviously you'll find out that it's fake gold.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot create gold out of thin air.
Yeah.
And so it's the same. Bitcoin works really, really well. But some companies, they don't know how to work. So, you know, you can steal credit cards just as you can steal Bitcoins. But it's not the problem of the Bitcoin. It's problem of how different companies secure it.
Yeah.
So there's the difference people don't understand. They say, well, Bitcoin has been hacked. No, the exchange has been hacked. Or somebody stole Bitcoins from, you know, a company. But Bitcoin works. Very well.
Yeah, and it's funny when I talked about Bitcoin to some of the people, and you know they know about it because they hear it on the news occasionally.
Oh yeah.
And then you know when the Mt. Gox you know thing happened, my patients came in and they say exactly what you said. Bitcoin was just, did you see in the news? Bitcoin was just hacked.
And I had to
explain just like what you said. You know, if a thief you know robs a bank. Is that the problem with the currency or the problem with the bank, right?
With the bank, right? Yeah.
So, yeah, people have to, you know, that's our job, is to dispel these myths, right?
Myths, yeah. And I'm really sorry that the most media, they do a very poor job explaining all this. It improved recently, but before it was all these stories like, yeah, the Bitcoin was hacked. Because the media can, you know, they can word the article differently so that it's really clear that it's not Bitcoin, but just some random company in Japan. But they worded it, they made it sound like, oh, this is the end of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. And I think it was China and Thailand that are the only two countries that have banned it. Do you know about that?
Yeah, well, actually, China didn't ban it because you have quite a few Bitcoin exchanges in China.
Oh, really?
The legal situation in China, in the world around Bitcoin is changing really fast.
Okay.
There is a website that's called BitLegal. I don't know if it's .net, I think. Well, you can find it on Google. BitLegal, and they try to compile the news from all over the world regarding the legality. But it has been made illegal, I think, in Thailand and I think in some South American country. Right. Most countries, they don't care. But it's what we say in the Bitcoin community, again, is the government, they fear Bitcoin because it's very open and it's very secure and very transparent. So it's a competition to shady government businesses, you know. So they ban it. There is even a joke going on, like, whatever Russia tries to ban on China, tries to ban, get into it. It's the future, because Russia and China, they are afraid of the future. So whatever they ban, that's the future.
Yeah, man, you know, apply that to the U.S., to, I guess, most countries, you know, whatever they ban, you know, get into that. But yeah, the IRS, I think, it declared Bitcoin as property, right?
Yes, in the States, anyway, yeah, that's correct.
So what are the implications of that?
I'm not quite sure. You know, I don't follow the U.S. Rules much.
Okay.
I think there are some tax implications on how you can have to tax Bitcoin price-wise. Like, for example, you buy Bitcoin at $100 and then you sell it because you buy something with it, or just sell it at $500. So it counts as a property, you know, buy and sell. It doesn't count as a currency, buy and sell. And there are different rules on the tax on your profit, you know, on the difference.
But how are they gonna track you? Like, how are they gonna know that? I guess it's up to the person to admit it, right? To admit that you did that?
Basically, yes. You see, you have companies like Coinbase, for example, that hold your Bitcoins for you. They are called like Bitcoin Bank, basically, because they hold the Bitcoins. But they want a copy of your ID and all that. So, you know, if you have a lot of movements that you don't declare, they can report you to the government agency.
God. Really?
Because they hold your Bitcoins and they are based in the U.S. law, so they have to track your transactions. It's like the bank can report you.
Yeah.
But the beauty of Bitcoin is that you can download, like you did, you can download your wallet. You don't have to give your personal information to anybody, and you don't have to report your transactions to anybody. But you have to hold your Bitcoins yourself. If you trust Bitcoins to some other party that is based in U.S. law or European law, they have to follow the law, of course. So that's like, yeah.
So what's the difference between holding, like you can hold your Bitcoin on a website, which is not really a bank, like blockchain.info. Like, I'm not holding my wallet. My wallet's not on my computer, right? It's on this, in this website. Is that correct?
Actually, yeah, it's a little confusing. Basically, blockchain is like a cross between a bank and the Bitcoin, like holding it yourself. If you download a software to your computer or your cell phone, then you hold your Bitcoins yourself. If you use Coinbase or Circle.com or somebody like that, then they are your bank, because you trust them with everything. And blockchain, it's like intermediary, blockchain.info, because you hold your own like bank keys. How can I explain it easily? They encrypt the information, but they don't see your password. They can never recover your password.
Mm-hmm.
If you notice, there is no password recovery option on their website.
Mm-hmm.
So they cannot, you know, You hold your Bitcoins, they are like an intermediary. Because if, you know, the bank can recover your password, Coinbase can recover your password, so they have access to your Bitcoins. But blockchain cannot recover your password, so they cannot access your Bitcoins. So it's like a crossover. The ideal thing is download open source free software to your cell phone and hold your Bitcoins in your cell phone or in your computer. There is no intermediary then. But the blockchain is convenient because you are on a website, accessible from any computer. But if you lose your password, they cannot recover it for you. So it's safer than than email or a bank, because, you know, bank has access to all your funds. So blockchain.
And what's an example of some websites that where you can get the software to download onto your computer?
Oh, the easiest thing really is to go to www.bitcoin.org. It's a website made by Bitcoin Foundation, and they have a part of the website that gives you a selection of different Bitcoin wallets, and they explain which ones are based in your computer, which ones are open source. They explain the differences. It's really a great site, bitcoin.org, made by Bitcoin Foundation. I really recommend it, a lot of videos and reading materials. Because there is in recent years, quite a competition in Bitcoin wallets. Before there were two or three, now you have 10 or 20 different Bitcoin wallets. From different countries, you even have it's called a hardware wallet, that it's like a small USB stick, but it's not a USB stick, it's actually a small, tiny computer that holds your Bitcoins, and you plug it in the computer, make a payment, and unplug it, so, you know, it cannot be hacked, because it's not connected to the internet.
Nice.
So, it's really growing really fast, but for most people, it's maybe too confusing, so they websites like you said, blockchaininfo, circle.com, coinbase.com, which looks like email. You don't see much difference. It looks like email for most people, like, for example, Coinbase. You actually type an email address and send the Bitcoins to an email address, like you would say send email. Mm-hmm. And if the other person already is a Coinbase user, they get the Bitcoins. If not, they can sign up or they can forward the Bitcoins to their own computer. Mm-hmm. For most people, yeah, maybe they prefer this kind of third-party services, but, you know, you have to trust the third party.
Yeah.
If you want to do it yourself, it's getting easier and easier because the programs are getting better and better.
So I assume you're also following the Ross Ulbricht trial, the Silk Road?
Oh, a little bit, yeah.
What are your perspectives on that, your opinions?
The whole thing is crazy. I'm more, you know, liberty inclined, of course. This guy, he was facilitating, you know, online trade in illegal and legal things. It's a myth that Silk Road was only for illegal things. It was for anything. Mm-hmm. But it was outside of government site, so most people used it for illegal things, but it was for anything and everything. So he was a libertarian. He's a libertarian and anarchist because he was just facilitating a free trade. I don't think it was his, I don't think it was his intention to steal or harm people or whatever. So I think it's like maybe a too much what's going on. It's like, you know, you still have drugs and illegal sales all over the world on the streets. And it's more dangerous. Actually, Silk Road was safer for the buyers and sellers because they didn't have to meet in person in some shady place.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But of course, I think, yeah, it's like, you know, it depends on your view of the government and the policies. I think that, you know, it was like the prohibition of the alcohol in the States earlier, you know, 20th century. Who did it help? It only helped to grow mafia. Like the drug prohibition grows mafia in Mexico because they make more money. When it becomes legal, there is not so much profit margin.
Mm-hmm.
And people will buy it if it's legal or not, they will buy it anyway.
Yeah.
So I think it's too much what they are doing, but, well, it depends if you like the government policies. Some people may be more communist inclined and they may say, yeah, we have to kill all the drugs. So where do you draw the line? Is alcohol a drug or is tobacco a drug? Maybe chocolate is addictive. I don't know.
my wife would argue that one. Chocolate. I keep chocolate away from my wife.
So it really depends how you view the government. But I think it's too much. I'm really more free-minded. And I can see it in Mexico that I would say because the drugs are illegal here, that's what makes a lot of money for the mafia here, you know, like it did with the alcohol in the States. But of course, if you live in a country, that you have to follow the laws of the country where you live in. So,
yeah.
Ross Ulbricht was not declaring taxes. He was facilitating the sales of illegal substances according to U.S. law. Well, now the marijuana is not anymore illegal in some parts of the U.S. So what do you make of that? I mean, the laws change. So, like the alcohol was illegal. If I'm right, it was illegal in the States 100 years ago or less than 100 years ago. Well, now it's not illegal. So what's right or what's wrong? It depends on the, you know, on the time and place, I guess.
Yeah, what was funny, I tell this story a lot to people, is, you know, the insanity of man-made law is, I think it was like around 1932, 1933. Well, 1932 is like alcohol was illegal and gold was legal to hold, right?
Okay.
And then the very next year,
no kidding,
alcohol is legal and gold is illegal to hold, right? The complete opposite.
And of course, it's all for the benefit of the people, of the citizen.
Of course.
The whole point is that it's for our protection.
And because we are the government, right? We control the government.
Well,
we are the government. Don't worry. If anything, if we do anything wrong, it's because you wanted us to, right? Exactly. Yeah. But you know, you talked about the Mexican drug cartels, because that's one thing when I tell people how wonderful a place to live, for example, Mexico is, that's the first thing they say. What about the drug cartels? It's so dangerous. People get, you know, dying all the time over there. So it's, you know, so much crime. But what would you say to those people?
Right. Well, it's not so bad, actually, because we also do, you know, this travel business and we bring tourists here and they ask the same things. Mostly the drug cartels, they kill each other. They don't worry about the regular people. There are some kidnappings of, you know, of the rich people, so they get more money from the ransom and stuff, but they don't care about the regular people. So if you have to be in a wrong time, wrong place, so to speak, to be in a trouble with the drug cartels.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to avoid certain areas that are known for drug cartels or things like that, but it's not like they would go after you and try to rob you or kill you. They really try to move the drugs around and push them to the States. They don't, you know, bother regular citizens or tourists.
Mm-hmm.
For tourists or foreigners, it's even better, I have to say, because of being foreigners. You know, imagine there is news that some U.S. citizens were kidnapped or killed. That brings a lot of trouble to the country, and the drug cartels, like you would say, they're like parasites, so they don't want to kill the whole country, mm-hmm. the whole host. They want it to, so it seems okay. They don't want, you know, to be all over the news and, you know, have the government sending troops and military all over. They are not smart enough to stay low. Sometimes they just have to have a shooting midday, you know,
really?
Somewhere.
Oh.
It has happened. Not often, but it has happened. So they should be more quiet, I guess.
You should give them some consulting, some work. You should get some suggestions on how to be more inconspicuous, you know.
Yeah, because, you know, but it's really, I have to say, it's not as bad as the media make it. And of course, you have shady areas in any country, in any city. So you just avoid the bad areas and you'll be fine. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just like kind of like how dangerous is Harlem or, you know, maybe Brooklyn at a certain time of the night, you know, it's like, sure, you have ghettos, you have slums and you have shady people everywhere you go, right? Like, just, you know, everybody knows those places, so why would you go there, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the whole point, yeah. And they really don't, you know, they mind their own business, but sometimes, you know, you just happen to be in the wrong place, so.
Yeah. Well, all right, so I don't want to take up any more of your time. So why don't you let people know where they can find you, any websites or Facebook pages or anything like that?
Sure, yeah. Well, I really highly recommend, again, the website bitcoin.org for anything Bitcoin-related. Me, myself, I'm on Facebook under Sammy Kovac, SamyKovac, Sammy Kovac on Facebook. I work for myself. I don't really have a business website that I can people can visit, but they can easily find me by my name or anything. You see, the Bitcoin thing is more like person to person, or you know, word of mouth. That's an interesting thing. You don't have like a company that's called Bitcoin Inc. that would, you know, promote Bitcoin. Everybody promotes like themselves. Coinbase promotes Coinbase. BitPay promotes BitPay. So it's like, you know, you don't, nobody promotes dollar. Everybody promotes, okay, we are JP Morgan, we are Chase. So it's the same with Bitcoin. I promote myself. I'm here in the Lake Chapala area. So anybody can just, you know, get in touch with me on Facebook or whatever, and I'll be happy to help them with anything Bitcoin related. And really the great resource is bitcoin.org to anything Bitcoin related, open source, free. You can read and watch videos. Yeah, there's no cost. Anybody can, you know, play with it. Yeah.
So do you have a website, samykovac.com or something?
No, I'm on I don't have like a business website or anything. I'm on Facebook, under Sammy Kovac. I sell Bitcoins on different Mexican exchanges, which are public, like Unicent, like Bitso.com, like MaxBT.com. I'm also a trader on LocalBitcoins.com. That's the beauty of Bitcoin. People ask me, that's another question to answer maybe, or just quickly say, people ask, well, so it's like a Ponzi scheme, right? So you sell me Bitcoins and you keep my money, and then I sell Bitcoins to somebody else. It's like a pyramid, right? And you are on the top because you are the first in the area. Like, no, forget it. It's like gold.
Yeah.
You can buy Bitcoins from me, but I don't have any monopoly. You can buy Bitcoins from anybody who sells them.
Yeah.
Okay, they say, okay, that's interesting. And where do we sell them? Do we have to find you? What if you disappear? What do I do with the Bitcoins if you disappear? I say, come on. You can spend them on overstock.
You should tell them, if I disappear, they're useless. I'm sorry. You know, you lost your money.
So it's really open. Anybody can talk to me, but they can talk to hundreds of other people in Mexico. But I live in this area, like Chapala area, so maybe I'm like the best choice here, because, you know, you don't want to do it on a distance. So yeah, I'd be happy to help anybody with Bitcoin. I'll be also in Acapulco on this Anarchapulco conference. I'll be doing lecture here later. Maybe in a month in this area. So yeah,
very good.
It's all on the internet, free. Awesome. And uncensored information.
that anarchic chaos of internet that we all hate, right? Nobody likes the internet. There's no laws. There's no rules to the internet. We need rules. So is there any last message you want to leave the listeners before we go?
I'm really happy to be on your show. I really like what you are doing for the people. It's very important to spread the message. It's this era we live in is the era finally of free information, that people can have access to information they need. So that's one message. And maybe another message is, take a look at the Bitcoin. It's really simple, easy, and you'll be amazed how could you live with the current banking system? It's a comparison of to the letters and email. That's the comparison to the current banking system and Bitcoin. It's not, you don't have to understand the technicalities. Just give it a try. I mean, look at the Skype. We can do interview in different parts of the world. And how does Skype works? Who understands how it works?
Exactly.
Well, I don't understand it perfectly. And I'm involved in all this technology. So don't worry if you don't understand Bitcoin. Just try it out. Try it out.
Skype is just too expensive. All those long distance fees, you know. This call is costing me how much money? Right?
Yeah, that's exactly what Bitcoin is about. Yeah, it's the money for the internet, and internet for the money. It's the future.
Yeah, I tell people that. It's like, you know, what mail is to email, you know. Actually, that's one thing I tell people when they say, but Bitcoin doesn't exist, right? How can you tell me that I'm buying something and it doesn't even exist? Like, at least money I can hold in my hand, paper, you know,
right,
or coins.
Right.
But I tell people, so does that mean that email is useless because you can't hold email, you know, it doesn't exist? Is it, that mean it's useless, right? Of course not, you know.
Then it goes, some people would say, like they say to me, well, but you can print the email. You can print the email. You can hold the paper. Mm-hmm. And I say, you can print Bitcoins. You can print your Bitcoin codes from your computer, mm-hmm. and you can hold them. You can even put them in a safe so nobody steals them. You can print out your Bitcoins, actually.
Yeah,
of course, you can spend them online, but you can print them out.
And what are those coins? You always see the coins, you know, that people have of Bitcoin. What
right.
is that?
Yeah, the coins, that's actually, you know, Bitcoins, they are like codes, you know, access codes to the Bitcoin network, you can say. But the coins, they hold the different numbers and codes. So it's just a place where you write it down.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you type it back into the computer from this coin, you can spend it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like a, you know, like a funny thing, like a coin.
Yeah.
But you can't do anything with it. It just hides or holds the actual code.
Yeah.
To spend your Bitcoin.
Yeah.
But many people like it because they can hold it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I don't think people will take Bitcoin seriously until they see, oh, it's a coin. Okay, I can see the coin now. That's good. Okay. Now it's real.
Yeah. It's funny how people need time to adjust to new things. Yeah.
I know.
But that's,
you know,
that's,
I mean,
just how it is.
I mean, without slaves, who would pick the cotton, right? I mean, you know, we need the slaves to pick the cotton, so we can't have a society. How can we have a society without dollars and cents, you know? We always had dollars and cents, right?
Well, we only remember dollars and cents, but, you know, 100 years ago or 200 years ago, there was no dollars. So.
Exactly. Yeah, people, that's what learning about monetary history teaches you, is that, you know, currency, especially government-controlled currency, is just disastrous, you know, and just destroys the middle class and robs the middle class, basically, of their wealth.
Yeah,
and people
I've seen it happen.
You know, people have to understand that. So, all right. Well, thank you very much for the opportunity for the interview, Sammy.
Thanks to you also. It was great, yeah.
You're welcome. So this is Peaceful Anarchism on the Voluntary Virtues Network. Wishing everyone have a wonderful day. Take care. Bye.
Bye. Thanks.